From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Here's something that happens to me a lot as host of this show. We have someone on the program to talk about ideas or policies, and they turn out to be so interesting that I think to myself, well, that person must have a lot more to say, and I want to listen. So that happened last week on our show about right-wing extremism infiltrating American law enforcement. Detective Sergeant Heather Taylor joined us. She's an officer with the St. Louis Metro Police. And she talked about some of the things she's seen inside her own department.
Before smartphones, you logged in to your department email through this Cop Talk webpage, which is associated with the St. Louis Police Association, Police Officers Association. And when you would log into this webpage, you scroll down a little bit and you would see some of the most vile and racist content. And you would see things like African Americans being referred to as monkeys, apes, the N-word being used, people in our community being referred to as animals. And this was before Michael Brown was killed.
Well, Detective Sergeant Taylor is a Black woman. She's worked in law enforcement for 20 years. She's president of the Ethical Society of Police, and violence has touched her own family. So her story is an American story. And today, she's come back to the show to talk with us about it. Detective Sergeant Taylor, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you for having me, Meghna.
I'm so glad that you're willing to spend an hour with us. I really appreciate it. Let me just first start by asking you, the last time we had you on, I really, at the end of that hour, I got on the phone with the whole staff and I was like, that woman is incredible. Can we have her back on? She must have a lot more to say. So you really left an impression. I just wanted to underscore that. But let me start with this simple question. You've been in law enforcement for a couple of decades. How much has it changed for you across that time?
I think that it's changed a lot in this. It's changed a lot, but kind of stayed the same as well. I remember first starting off and just being very, very naive, even though I came from the inner city. I've seen violence. I was kind of shielded a little bit from it. And coming into it with this belief that I was going to save the world and bring people together. And I wanted to be a police officer. It's not a popular opinion because I wanted to protect victims of violence. I wanted to arrest people that were predatory and preyed on children, preyed on elderly. And murdered people. That's why I wanted to become a police officer. And I also wanted to become a police officer because my aunt was murdered by law enforcement. Mm. And you have these different things. And I came into it with this belief that I was going to be able to fix some things. And it was very naive of
yeah.
me.
Okay. So hang on for just a second here. I'm going to slow us down a little bit because,
okay.
See, this is what interesting guests do. They say a lot in just a couple of sentences. So let me dig into this first of all a bit. First and foremost, you said, in your words, that you grew up in the inner city and that you saw that you were largely protected from it, but saw still some violence growing up. Where did you grow up and what exactly were you talking about?
I grew up in North St. Louis, and it's predominantly African-American. And, you know, we encountered law enforcement often growing up, some good and some not so good. And my experiences with law enforcement kind of started there. My brother, I'm the youngest of five, and my next sibling, my brother, he was always in trouble. No matter what we did, he was just in trouble. And he was my only friend growing up. He really was. And he got into trouble. And so the police would show up. Sometimes they were nice. Other times they weren't so nice, but, you know, one of my experiences with law enforcement was my mother. My brother was charged charged as a juvenile for an adult crime, murder. He did it. He was guilty. My mother literally was my first experience with kind of law enforcement and why you have to be accountable as a citizen, why law enforcement has to be accountable. And I think I was 14, 15. My brother was 15. He was ultimately certified, I believe, at 16 years old to stand trial for murder. My brother was guilty of it. And, you know, I know that's something that most people don't like to say about their family members, that hard reality. But my mother literally cornered my brother and told him, you're going to have to go to jail for this. You murdered someone. That person has a family. And just being devastated by it all, because this is my brother we're talking about. Mm-hmm. We're talking about my brother and my only friend. And he had to be held accountable for murder and placed in a system that my mother didn't trust. We didn't trust the criminal justice system. We had experiences where they were mostly negative. There were some positive points in there with law enforcement. So, you know, growing up North St. Louis, we ran mm-hmm. sometimes from law enforcement, and that's kind of just kind of how it was.
Do you mind if I ask who your brother murdered?
He murdered a man. It was about a block over. I remember my mother hearing the shot and just kind of calling out to him because, you know, literally he was always running away from home, not wanting to stay, wanting to be in the streets. And he murdered a man a block over in the same block that my aunt was ultimately murdered by a law enforcement officer as well. So it's growing up North St. Louis is just kind of these are the traumas that are every day for people. And it's how you adjust to those traumas, because they're going to be there. It's how you adjust and how you survive them.
And so your brother was incarcerated.
Yes, he was sentenced to 25 years. He did about 22. He's been out. He's not been in trouble again. And it's difficult, you know, because you committed an act that's the highest crime. I'm a homicide supervisor. And you know that it's wrong and you have to be held accountable for it, but this is still your loved one. No matter what, this is my brother. Mm. I love my brother. And he had to be held accountable for it. And his life hasn't been easy, of course. And it, in a sense, it shouldn't be. You know, you took someone's life. A family is without a loved one because of your actions. So sometimes he walks, you know, 2-3 miles to get to work. He works 2 and 3 jobs, but he's always employed. And so I'm proud of my brother in that sense that he has managed it and has come out and he works. My brother has a number of ailments, but he's not going to collect a check for that or anything like that. That's his thought process with it. And, you know, I respect him for the changes that he's made. It's not been difficult for him. It's been very difficult, but he's chosen to work hard and work through things and in jobs where sometimes he's not paid at all. Sometimes he's paid because he's a convicted felon and his mm-hmm. felony is murder. So,
So that's the story of what happened to your brother. I'm going to ask you about your aunt here in just a second, but can you tell me a little bit more? Do you mind, Detective Sergeant? Tell me a little bit more, since you said that your brother was your best friend growing up, mm-hmm. that when he committed this crime and ended up incarcerated, what impact did that have on you?
Devastating. It's just, he was, you know, when someone's your world, this is your friend and you share everything with them, you play with them. He taught me basketball, you know, just all these different things. It was devastating. So for me, luckily I had a neighbor who had a basketball hoop and my mother and my siblings could watch me play, which was outside right near an alley. I didn't live in the safest of neighborhoods. So my neighbor, would watch me play and make sure I was okay. And I remember times just having to stop and like walk or run to the front because someone was coming down the alley that I didn't I didn't know, and it wasn't the safest, but it was my outlet. So basketball became my everything. I was just, like I said, I was kind of isolated from a lot of things, thank goodness, because of, my family, my mother in particular. But it was very difficult living without him. But I was really angry at him as well. It was one of those things where I was like, how dare you kill someone and you take yourself away from me? And we knew murder was wrong in our family. We knew that. And we knew he had to be held accountable. Our grandmother was very accountable, hardworking woman. She was the glue that held us together, just like our aunt. They were some of the strongest women I've ever encountered in my life. And you do something like that, and it's saddening because you murdered someone. It's embarrassing because this is your brother and they took someone's life. And
I have this image in my mind of a young Heather Taylor shooting hoops, right? As a way to cope. You went on to play Division I basketball, do I have that right?
Yes, I did. Went on to play Division I basketball. And, that was why, because it became my life. And thank goodness I went to a high school, predominantly African-American high school. And my English teachers, my math teachers, my coach, my teammates, they just accepted me. I belonged. And I'm grateful for that. It saved my life.
Well, we have to take a break here, Detective Sarja, and when we come back, I'd like you, if you could, to tell us a story about your aunt, your path into law enforcement, and then, of course, the 20 years that you spent on the force as a Black woman, and how you see that in terms of all that's happening in America now. So there's so much more to talk about. We are talking today with Detective Sergeant Heather Taylor. She is a member of the St. Louis Police Department and president of the Ethical Society of Police. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are so delighted this hour that Detective Sergeant Heather Taylor is back with us. She is a member of the St. Louis Metro Police Department, president of the Ethical Society of Police. She's been on the force for 20 years, and her story is an American story. There's so much that we want her to share with us, to learn about life as a Black woman, as a police officer, and this moment in American history. And the detective sergeant has been gracious enough to come back to share her life more with us. Now, before the break, Sergeant Taylor, you were talking about your brother, and that as a teenager he murdered someone, and you had said that on the very same block where that happened, your aunt, in a separate incident, was killed by law enforcement?
Yes. Our aunt, who was probably hands down the protector of everyone in our family and the strongest, one of the strongest women that I've been lucky enough to know, and we share blood, so it's, it's just amazing, but her life was cut short. She was shot and killed by a law enforcement officer, a deputy marshal. I was a freshman in college, and remember getting the call, coach walking up. We were in practice and them telling me, what happened. And my cousin, her daughter was a police officer as well. She was a police officer at the time. So we have this person who is the fighter and the protector of everyone, this beautiful woman who is murdered, and it broke our family, broke our hearts. Or, you know, her, she hadn't seen any of her. She was shot and killed as she was leaving. The person that she was dating at the time was a deputy marshal. He shot and killed her. Usually a lot of times domestic violence happens as one party is leaving. And, you know, he served 3 years in jail for it. And, you know, that felt like another kick in the gut for our family, especially her children, who were very, very close to their mother. And they loved her, and she, you know, she hadn't had the chance to actually see any of her grandchildren born, and them to see who she was, and that she was this strong protector and a beautiful woman that's gone, you know, through violence.
Detective Sergeant, I just, forgive me for interrupting, but I've got to ask. So your aunt was in a relationship with this law enforcement officer, and you say he shot and killed her as she was leaving, and he got 3 years? But you said earlier your brother, as a juvenile, or ultimately when he was tried, he served more than 20 years.
Yes, yes. And you look at the system. So a lot of times, no matter if you're black or white, the system kind of shields you in law enforcement. So he was a deputy marshal. He worked at the courts where the judges were. So, you know, who knows what happened with that? You know, it was him and her. He's telling his story. And she's not here to tell her story because he murdered her, and he's given 3 years and he's out. And we're given, you know, every day we live, we're given this death sentence with her not being here. And she was the glue, literally the glue, and her children have all survived and done well, but they're without their mother. I mean, especially at that age, they were all in their early 20s, just like, teens. We were, I believe I was 19 when I found out. And my cousin was 19 at the time, because we were like a month apart. And it was devastating. It still is devastating for them. You know, we're trying to have a street dedicated, that street changed to her name. And that's been a bit of a process. And I remember telling my cousin that I was working on that. I was going to do that before I left the police department, and how she broke down and cried. And these things are, this type of trauma is there. It's never going to go away. Mm. It'll, you know, it's, you cope a little bit better, but it's always going to be there for my cousins and my family, my mother, who had a stroke last year and who still talks about her. You know, where is she at? It's
and
difficult.
For you.
Yes, absolutely. It pushes you. It pushes you when it comes to accountability and being fair. And it, you know, when you think about it, it's just, you know, it's, you try not to think about it that much because it does hurt.
So here is the system that you can see and you have seen for so many years with clear eyes, and how it's had this sort of multifaceted impact on your family and your life. So tell me a little bit more about why becoming or entering that system, becoming a law enforcement officer, you felt was your calling.
Yes, because I wanted to, like I said before, I became a police officer because I wanted to stand up for children who were victims of violence, to adults who were victims of domestic violence and gun violence, no matter who it is. Violence is not the right way, whether it's an officer or a citizen, unless you're defending your life. And it's pushed me to it, you know, those experiences pushed me into law enforcement, and it's something I always wanted to do. And once here, it's been difficult at times because it's finding that balance and also seeing things that, and complaining and reporting things over and over and over and over again with the same people. That I have to go to work with. Some of them I think are murderers. Some of them I think are the greatest people you could ever imagine. Some of them are hardworking. They're fair. They're of all races, all genders. But there are some within this field that have that I have strong beliefs about, that they've gotten away with murder, that they are racist, that they are homophobic, and balancing that with my ideals of that, hey, anybody that commits a violent crime has to be held accountable for it, no matter who they are, even me. There's no one that's above the law, and trying to find that balance and having to go to work sometimes with people who I don't feel comfortable turning my back on. And then working
with Sergeant Taylor.
So,
okay. So that stops me in my tracks here. How do you do that day in and day out? If there are people in your department that may be like across the desk from you, and you don't feel like you can turn your back on them, how do you do that?
You know, I sometimes wonder how I've done it. It just comes back to how I grew up, and we grow up so much, in especially in North St. Louis, you're in survival mode, and trauma becomes a routine for so many in our community now. And it's not just me. It's coping. It's how you cope. So, you know, I'm in training, my last firearms training, because I'm retiring. The person I was in the training with literally liked the idea of me bleeding out, called me the C word and some other things. And I'm in firearms training. I have my firearms on the table, and it's him and I, and it's a makeup course. And I am positioned just so that I can see him at all times, just in case, you know, the gun accidentally went off, that I'm ready to defend myself. And these are people that I work with. They're not terminated. You can report someone over and over and over and over. I've reported people over and over and over and over, and they haven't been terminated. Sometimes they have. I think under this chief that we have now, things have improved somewhat, but there are still so many officers that have no business in law enforcement, that are some of your, they would be the subjects of nightmares.
This happened. He said these things to you in the firearms training?
No, this was in 2017. We came out and said, well, I came out and said that I believe Jason Stockley committed murder. And there was a whole Facebook thread where he responded to it. And someone said that they wished that I bled out on a call with no backup. And he liked it. So he liked the idea of me dying. And this is a person I have to work with. And he called me the C word and some other things. And I reported him. He wasn't terminated for that. He received 2 days suspension in 2017.
Okay. So you mentioned the name of a different police officer, Jason Stockley, who had killed, I'm trying to keep the story straight here. Was it that year or in a different year he had killed a young black man?
So Jason Stockley killed Anthony Lamar Smith in 2011, and details emerged in 2016 about the particulars of that case. And I was in homicide at the time, and Jason Stockley's case, we weren't allowed to look it up, to pull it up. It was just secret. You know, you couldn't access it, just those things, which is a red flag most times. And things came out about his DNA being on the gun and not Anthony Lamar Smith's. A lot of things that he did, he said he was going to kill that. I think that's widely known that he said he was going to kill him with a few curse words in there, or a single curse word in there. And in 17, based off of the facts, I looked at the case, and we're, as a president of Ethical Society of Police, I looked at the case, and from what I knew in the media and the points of it, and came out with a statement that, hey, he should be convicted of murder, because anyone else would be. Anyone else would have been charged in 2011, and we know that. And that's the difference, is that a lot of times officers are given special consideration, just like my aunt's murderer. We're given the benefit of the doubt and less time in prison, or not booked accordingly or immediately when we should, just like Jason Stockley. And the same goes for the murderer of my aunt.
I'm seeing that he was eventually charged with first degree murder, but found not guilty. So that's
exactly
how that. Okay. Detective Sergeant Taylor, it is, I'm trying to think of the right word. It's terrifying, disturbing, to hear that, you feel like, obviously not everybody that you work with in the St. Louis PD, but there are some people you feel you can't turn your back on. How have you stayed safe? I mean, have you been concerned about your own personal safety in the 20 years you've been in the department?
Sometimes you are. My husband is 6'4", 265 pounds. So, you know, I have him there, which is a force in itself. He's former military, and my safety is important to him. But, you know, we set up cameras around our house. I have a camera in my car. He has a camera in his car. I am extremely proficient with firearms for the job, for lack of a better word there. And, you know, you just survive. It's just, you know, for me, it's how I address it. Sometimes you'll hear me chuckle a little bit, and it's because it's a survival instinct. This is how we grew up. You cope with trauma. And a lot of times in the African American community, we cope with trauma through laughter, through things that would be extreme to someone else. For us, is this trauma is normalized, unfortunately. And you just, even now as a law enforcement officer, you just deal with it. And not everybody wishes that I would bleed out. I have a lot of people that really support me in this community and really support me as officers. I have a lot of backing. Mm-hmm. And I know that if something were to happen to me, that they wouldn't stop until justice was served.
Right. So here's the thing. You are bravely and honestly telling us about terrible incidents of racism that you've experienced within the St. Louis Police Department and that you've experienced as a cop yourself. And at the same time, simultaneously, you are a law enforcement officer who, as you've been working hard, you've been saying for decades to try and do something about racism and white supremacy in law enforcement. So experiencing those two things together, I want to just explore with you for a second. And in order to do that, I hope you can listen with me to a little bit of tape that we pulled from another show that we did a while ago. And we featured William Riley. He's chief of police in Inkster, Michigan. And at the time, I had asked him about a comment that Attorney General Bill Barr had made, that the Attorney General believes that while institutional racism is part of the country, Barr said that there was no systemic racism in law enforcement today. So we played that clip for Chief Riley, and here's how the chief responded.
You cannot get away from the racist history in America. It was the police department that were the vanguard for racism in America. It was us, our profession, that says you can't drink from that water fountain. You can't go to that restroom. You can't eat in that particular place. It was the police. So to say all of a sudden, passage of a few laws that went away, it didn't go away.
So that is William Riley, chief of police in Inkster, Michigan. He was on our show a while ago, last month. I want to ask you, is that something that you think about, that you are wearing the uniform, as Chief Riley said? He said us. It was us, the police, law enforcement, that was an instrument, is an instrument of systemic racism in this country. Do you think about that as you do your job every day?
I think about it often. It's a part of what the Ethical Society of Police was founded for in 1972, to fight institutional racism, systemic racism within our police department and our community. So you think about it often, and it becomes just a daily routine. You know, there have been times we've literally reported the same officer for racism 7-8 times, and they're still employed. You know, it's a part of it. And being in this field and fighting it it's difficult. Yes, it is difficult. I wish there were more people of all races doing it, but it's real.
Well, we are talking this hour, we're listening this hour to Detective Sergeant Heather Taylor. She's been a member of the St. Louis Police Department for 20 years, and she's sharing the story of her life and her experiences as a Black woman in law enforcement. There's a lot more to talk about when we come back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This hour, we're listening to Detective Sergeant Heather Taylor. She joined us on the show a little while ago to talk about racism in policing. And she had so many interesting things to say, and her own life was something that I felt I could learn a lot more from. So we asked her back, and we're delighted that she's joining us this hour to share the story of her life. She's the president of the Ethical Society of Police. She's been in the St. Louis police force for several decades. She's a night watch homicide sergeant now in the St. Louis Metro Police Department. And Detective Sergeant, before I forget, before we sort of move on to sort of where you are now and what you think about your career in your country now, I've got to ask you, I'm deeply touched and inspired by what pulled you into law enforcement to begin with, this desire to stand up and defend victims of violence, young people, et cetera. Do you feel like you've had days, hopefully many days, on the job where you were able to do exactly that?
Do I feel like I have days that... I think that some days I feel like I have come to work and I've made a difference. There are some days where I literally feel like I'm drowning. Just drowning in everything that's happening, the culture of law enforcement over the 20 years that I've been in it, or almost 20. Some days you're like, well, wasn't this officer accused of doing this? And it's some outrageous incident where it should warrant termination. And you look up and that officer's still here. Or you've reported this officer over and over and over, and you look up, they're now gone, and they're at a different municipality working as law enforcement officers. Some days I feel I'm drowning and just kind of exhausted with it all at times. And then other days you feel like you have people who understand, they get it. You have young officers, and you have hope. You have hope that they will continue it and continue fighting. It's up and down.
Yeah. Well, but what about the people that you serve, that you were inspired to serve, to defend and protect? I mean, I'm hoping you've been on the force for 20 years. I'm hoping that you can think of several cases in which you were glad to be doing this work.
Oh, absolutely. I have an overwhelming number of people that I can say that we have helped and that I feel like I've helped. I have people that call me all the time from homicide victims, mothers, fathers, you know, that I wish good days, and I know they have bad days, and, you know, you call them on anniversary dates and things like that. That I stay in contact with, And there are times where the community has overwhelmingly shown that they've supported me, that they have given positive feedback to what we're trying to do in our community, what I'm trying to do, you know, but they're just, you know, it's overwhelming. Sometimes the bad days are, they are overwhelming. They are.
How do members of the community see you? Do they see Heather Taylor, daughter of St. Louis, the president of the Ethical Society of Police, or do they see a law enforcement officer?
I think people see all of that. It's all of the above. Some people in our community think I'm crazy that I'm risking my life by talking about these things. But if you're telling the truth, you know, what more can you do? Sometimes people will believe you. Sometimes they won't. Some people don't like you just because you're law enforcement. And I understand all of those points of view because I grew up in the inner city. I knew what it was like with some law enforcement. I understood the corruption and the mistreatment. And then I also understood the officers that actually stood up, that actually came back to the communities, that talked to us, sat down with us, and treated us like human beings. And I think the community views me, they probably view me as in different ways. You know, it's not easy for them, especially the communities of color and that have high poverty. I believe I've helped much more than I've not helped. You know, if I didn't help you, it wasn't from not trying to, that's for sure. And when you're talking about violence in our city, there are so many things that in my position, I'm in a position where we investigate murders. And a lot of times people don't feel comfortable talking to you. And I understand why they don't. And in a sense, I don't understand why they don't. You know, my time with a mother who held a brother accountable for murder, she was my first example of accountability and real accountability, mm-hmm. and it involved my brother. And sometimes I understand it, sometimes I don't, because each and every person is a victim, and everyone deserves justice. You know, no one has a right to take a life and to mistreat people, whether it's law enforcement or the community. So, and that's something that most people know about me in the community, and they'll say, whether they agree with me or not, that, you know, that's pretty much Heather. So,
yeah. Well, I want to talk with you a little bit about sort of where the country is right now regarding policing and racism. So I just want to listen, if we can, together, just to some of the recent reporting around reactions to the death of George Floyd. And this is specifically in terms of how people in St. Louis reacted and responded.
And here in St. Louis, hundreds of protesters outraged by the death of George Floyd.
Black lives matter!
Black lives matter!
I believe my life matters, and so I would like to support this cause.
Voting is the only way that things are going to change. I'm not a proponent of violence or tearing up of the city. However, people that are oppressed and don't have a voice, unfortunately, their voice comes out in ways that are destructive.
Signs of a new era coming to downtown St. Louis. Protesters calling for the defunding of police departments. For some, that means disbanding them altogether.
So those are some news reports from KSDK, the NBC affiliate, and Fox 2 in St. Louis as well, and just in terms of protests that have taken place in St. Louis following the death of George Floyd. Sergeant Taylor, when you've seen those protests, what have you thought? How have you felt?
It's the First Amendment right. I have no issue whatsoever with anyone. Yeah. That's a nonviolent protester and that's fighting for Black lives, because Black lives have to matter to everyone. And I understand it 100%. So I'm not I have no issues with that at all. I only have issues with violence in that, whether that violence is towards law enforcement, whether it's law enforcement towards the community. And in our city, we have a divided city a lot of times along racial lines. You have the Delmore Divide. North of Delmore is very poor and impoverished. South of Delmore is extremely wealthy and not impoverished, of course. And we have these issues that are going on that are a lot of times about Black lives. And in law enforcement, you have a law enforcement department in St. Louis County, Ferguson, St. Louis City, that has continuously been the subject of national news about incidents where Black lives didn't matter. And you understand it and absolutely First Amendment right. Speak up.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not so much the fact of the protest that I was asking you about, because people have the right to assemble and to protest. Voices should be raised. Let me refine my question. I was asking you more about, I'm thinking about the stories you just told us across this hour about what you've experienced as a law enforcement officer from your fellow officers, the racism. Mm-hmm. And here now across the country for weeks and weeks, we've had Americans marching, protesting. There seems to be sort of this renewed awakening. And I just wonder, are you thinking it's about time, or do the protesters have the right idea? I mean, just that kind of level of, like, how has this had an impact on you?
Yes, they do have the right idea, and I love it. I love it. We know that we're protesting, that we have people coming from all walks of life coming together to protest because an African-American man was murdered. And it was right there. And it was one of the times where people watched for 8 minutes and 46 seconds an officer that had an indifference towards his life, as this man was asking for his mother, was being murdered right in front of us. And it outraged people. It should have outraged officers. It should have outraged everyone. And it's come to the point where police departments all around the country are second guessing the things that they're doing that have been historically biased towards minorities, predatory policing, the structural racism that's in place in a lot of police departments, including our own and in locally, and the talks of defunding the police and reallocating those resources to where they should be. Police have changed from being guardians to being warriors, where we think that we have to get them at all cost and we get them in any kind of way. We can't be that. There are things that just aren't police matters. And when the talks about defunding the police, I understand it. I agree with some of it, because you can't have officers responding on mental wellness calls that are not police business. You can't have officers responding on conflicts that should not involve law enforcement. And when we get there, where we have no training or a lack of training, or that it is that surrounds mental health, you can't tell someone that 40 hours of training is better than someone who's gone to school for 4 years in this field. That's not our job. And we're interjecting us in these positions where we have shown repeatedly that we are the worst examples of it. And another thing with the protests internally in our police department is that for 7 years, we've been trying to have an officer fired who has been racist, has said racist things over and over and over again. And it looks like he may be terminated. It's like, if it wasn't for the protesting, I don't know if he necessarily would. And this officer killed someone in 2012. And I was the scene investigator with that case, and I believed he killed someone. He got away with it and couldn't prove it, but the system failed people. And this officer remained, even despite every single year reporting him for his racism, he remained. And when we talk about systemic racism in law enforcement, this is a prime example of it. And being able to push people like that out the door and seeing officers and our high-ranking officers in our department retire or be pushed out the door because of their complicity with a lot of the stuff, the problems that are going on in the community. It's a victory. It's a small victory. It's a small victory, but it's something that is important to note.
Mm-hmm. Detective Sergeant Taylor, you've spent 20 years of your life on the force. Has it been worth it for you personally?
Yes, it has. I believe I've helped a lot of people, and I am proud of what I've done in standing up and fighting for people who wouldn't have a voice, and being the unexpected, because I don't think a lot of people would expect law enforcement to do that. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of helping and serving in my community and helping victims of violence, helping people who have faced police corruption and helped to expose it, and testifying for law enforcement and testifying against law enforcement. And it's been worth it. It's been worth it.
But you're retiring, though, so I'm guessing that you feel like there's limits to what you can do wearing the uniform.
Absolutely. For your sanity. Violence is trauma. I grew up around trauma. And the trauma with being a law enforcement officer, from seeing the trauma that we've committed as law enforcement and reporting it, and the trauma committed against us. I have friends who have been murdered in the line of duty. So that trauma goes both ways. But it is time. It is time, because it will wear you. It will wear you out. Anytime you show up on a homicide scene investigation, it's trauma. Anytime you report some officer for their level of ignorance and violence and racism, that's another form of trauma. So it's time to go for my sanity.
You may be putting your badge down, but you're not done, though. I understand you're gonna go to law school now. Is that right?
That's the plan. I am studying for the LSAT, and hopefully I'll get a good score. And I will be accepted in a local law school in this area, St. Louis or Illinois area. And that's my plan, to come back and work from the inside, maybe for the Innocence Project or something like that. That's ultimately one of my dream jobs. So.
Wow. Well, Detective Sergeant Taylor, I cannot thank you enough for coming back and so openly and honestly sharing your life story and the story of your career. It's been a real honor to have you on the program. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Well, Detective Sergeant Heather Taylor is president of the Ethical Society of Police. They represent many black officers in the St. Louis region. She's also a night watch homicide sergeant with the St. Louis Metro Police Department. And as you've heard, she served on the force for 20 years. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.